preaching to this church, and it's bright and sunny outside. So I guess I can claim that I bring sunshine to your life. But actually, I was thinking about that, and I thought maybe this church is bringing sunshine into my life. And well, thank you for bringing sunshine into my life. It's good to be back again, and as Philip mentioned, I am walking through a series of sermons on the confession of faith. Okay, and this morning we are looking at number 3, and it's about creation. So about creation, I want to say something about some of my experiences in the past 2 years. In the past 2 years, I've been involved with a project organized by Regent College called Pastoral Science. Pastoral Science. They have a website called Cosmos on the internet. This project gathers Christian leaders from all over the world, mostly North America, every year to discuss the relationship between science and theology. Okay, and in the first retreat, our featured speaker was Dr. Mark Henkelman from Toronto. And as a physicist and a geneticist, he showed us a glimpse of the marvel of creation. Okay, with his research on mice, his expertise is on medical imaging. So he was doing all kinds of really, really fancy medical images of mice to figure out what happens when you change certain genetic codes within the mouse DNA. Okay, and through other presenters, we were also reminded of the mind-blowing vastness of our universe. Our universe is huge. We cannot even imagine how huge it is. From nebulae light years away, that we can only see with the most powerful telescope, to our own solar system, to the inner space of quantum physics. We live in an amazing world, and no matter how advanced our science becomes, we never get tired, or we never stop being amazed at how incredibly wonderfully intricate our creation is. Today, we are going to the third article of our Confession of Faith, as I said, the one that deals with creation and humanity. Okay, and when the topic of creation comes up, inevitably, we will always come up with a question, well, what about creationism versus evolutionism? Okay, who is right? Did God create everything spontaneously, supernaturally, or did matter and life forms gradually develop over a long period of time? Okay, that seems to be the preoccupying question for many many evangelical Christians, as we think about the topic of creation. Okay. But at the risk of disappointing some of you, I'm not going to get into that debate this morning, except to make 3 very brief and basic points. First, I believe in creation. And I think that every Christian should and must believe in creation, that God is the ultimate source of the whole universe. Okay. Second, I don't believe the universe is a result of blind chance. And that is that the universe is inherently purposeless and meaningless. Okay. Now, does that say something about evolution? Not necessarily. Okay. I've just made a theological statement. Third, my third comment is that I believe questions about who and what purpose lie behind creation. Okay. Are different from questions about how and when creation happened. Theology, using the Bible, can help us explain the who and the why reasons of the questions. But science is better suited to answer the how and when questions. The Christian should not come to the question of creation with prior conclusion about the hows and the whens. Okay. Our task as people who think theologically and biblically, is to challenge scientists who make statements that are outside the bound of science, such as there is no God, or we are product of random chance. Now, those messages are precisely what some preeminent evolutionists, such as Richard Dawkins, that I mentioned in my first message, mentioned. Like, they always equate their idea of evolution with the idea, which is philosophical and theological, that this world, therefore, is random, purposeless, meaningless. Whoa, where do you get that? Okay, so our task is to challenge them to hold back, to bracket these radical claims about the nature and the purpose of the universe and stick to the science that they're doing, and they're doing well. Okay. No matter where you stand on the creationism versus evolution debate, though, the sad fact is that this debate can actually distract us from some very important truths that the Bible teaches about creation, God, us, and the relationship between these three, creation, God, and us, human beings. So let us turn our attention this morning to some of these teachings. Okay, first, I want to explore with you what the Bible teaches about creation. Now, if you like filling in the blanks, and your bulletin does have the outline, which you can fill in the blanks. Now, that's not your practice. That's fine. Just follow with me. Okay. The first point that I want to share about what the Bible teaches about creation is that it is distinct from God. Creation is distinct from God. It's different. Okay. This is kind of obvious, isn't it? The terms that the Bible uses tells us as much, that there is the Creator and there is creation, and they are different. Why do I make such an obvious point that even the language that we use tells us that creation and Creator are different and distinct? Well, there are many people, both now and in the ancient world, that believe nature to be part of God. Okay? So it is not obvious to many people that creation is distinct from the Creator God. So we have to make that clear. We have to think clearly about that. Okay? The idea that some of these people have is that God somehow squeezed some of himself to make the universe. Okay? So we, together with nature, are somehow made up of the same stuff that God is. And therefore, we and matter and the universe is just as eternal as God is. Okay? But our Christian faith contradicts this kind of idea that nature is eternal like God. Historically, Christians believe that God made the universe out of nothing. One text that has helped theologians think about this is Hebrews chapter 11, verse 3. It says, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what is visible. Okay? There was a time when what exists now did not exist. Okay? And creation, therefore, is absolutely distinct from the Creator. Now, if this sounds a little bit too philosophical, let me give you an example of the danger of linking creation too closely with our Creator God. Now, many people believe that since God made everyone, okay, we are all his children. Okay? We are all his children. I call this the Miley Cyrus theology, because Miley Cyrus apparently had made precisely this statement, that because we are all made by God, we are all children of God. But we are God's children through faith in Christ, and not because we are made by God. To assume that just simply because God has created us, therefore we are related to God as his children, and therefore have salvation in him, is dangerous. The Bible clearly teaches us that without Christ, we are lost. We are separated and lost from the life of Christ, life of God. And we do need salvation in Christ, through Christ, in order to be called again children of God. Okay? Now, the second point I can make about creation is that it is dependent on God. Okay, so first, creation is distinct from God, and second, creation is dependent on God. Okay? The universe not only owes its original existence to God, it still needs him to sustain its continual existence and to hold it together. Okay? Colossians chapter 1, verse 17 has this to say. Creation, no, he said, he is therefore all, before all things, and in him all things hold together. This is talking about Jesus Christ. So Jesus is before all things. Okay, because through him, through Christ, all things that were created. And in him all things hold together. This is present tense. This is not just talking about what Christ did at the moment of creation when he made everything, but it is now that God, through Jesus Christ, in heaven, is upholding everything. Okay? Now, if you allow me some imagination, I think that if God wishes, he can quit upholding the universe and the whole thing will just vaporize. Okay? The pews that you're sitting on right now, pretty solid, right? You're leaning all your weight on it. You're thinking, oh, this is good, comfortable. If God wishes at this moment to quit upholding the universe, the nuclei of the atom disintegrate, the molecules of the wood disintegrate, and you will also be disintegrating. So everything now that exists is upheld by his power. Okay? God is still very much involved with the universe. He is not some absent landlord in an autonomous universe. Okay? But one thing we have to know is that just because God can quit and deal with the universe differently does not mean that he does. In fact, we know from our observation that God does uphold the universe in very predictable ways. That's why we can do science. That's why we can do experiments. We can predict laws of physics. Because God upholds the universe in a predictable way. But that does not mean that he is not there, that he is not involved. That's why miracles can happen. That's why sometimes we don't quite understand exactly why things happen. Even now with quantum physics, we know that on a quantum level, there is a great amount of uncertainty about anything. So that is one way to understand that the creation itself now is dependent on God. Thirdly, creation is good. Put in bracket, originally good. Okay, creation is originally good. Genesis chapter 1 verse 31 makes this very clear declaration. After 6 days of creation, God looks at everything. He says, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Now, why does this matter? Why does it matter for us to understand that creation was originally created good? Well, the fact that creation was created good tells us that there's nothing inherently evil about the material universe. There's nothing inherently evil about it. Now, some people believe that the universe is so corrupt and so evil that there is no eternal future for it. Some people believe that the universe, the material universe, is all going to hell anyway because of its corruption. So why waste time maintaining it? Why waste time caring about the environment when all these things will pass away and burn in the fire? But what God has made good is worth saving. We don't live in a disposable universe. And this leads to me to the final point about creation. And that is creation is fallen and being recreated. Creation is fallen and it's being recreated. If God made everything good to start with, so why do we see so many things wrong with this world, with this universe? Okay, I mean, nature itself, I'm not even talking about human morality, I'm just talking about nature itself, seems to be hostile and running downhill. On a personal level, we can experience it. We experience this in sickness and death. Okay, we get sick, and the older we get, the easier we get sick. And eventually, we will die of our last illness. And on a cosmic level, we know that the second law of thermodynamics predicts increasing disorder, entropy in this universe, leading to eventual heat death for the whole universe. The biblical answer for why the universe is this way is that creation is fallen because of sin. Okay? This world is corrupt and has fallen because of sin. Lorraine mentioned this morning that she had computer problem. Wow, I had some computer problem of my own recently. Some of my files also went corrupted. Now you wonder, why do computer files get corrupted? I mean, weren't they created perfect in the first place? I haven't read any major theological treatises on the corruption of computer files. But my guess, my feeling, my instinctive feeling theologically is that this is part of the creation. This is just like the rest of the creation, that good things that were made good somehow will get worse and corrupted because this world is fallen. Now, have you ever observed a file sitting there in your computer suddenly get better? Okay? You haven't put in those nice fonts or those graphics, suddenly open the file, whoa, improved file. Never happens. But files get corrupted. This is how the world operates. But the Bible also presents a hopeful side, a hopeful expectation for the future of the creation. Creation is not only fallen, but it's also being recreated by God. Recreated by God. One passage that speaks about this, both the fallenness of creation and its hope for redemption in the future, is in Romans chapter 8. Okay. Romans chapter 8, verses 19 to 22 says, "The creation waits in eager expectation for the sons of God to be revealed." That's us. "For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time." So creation in this fallen state right now is groaning. Earthquakes, hurricanes, famines, droughts. It's longing for the sons of God, the redeemed people of Christ, to be revealed at the last day. And it too will be liberated, the Bible says. That is great hope for our creation. Now, this creation is not all going down the drain. And the text that speaks about this is Revelation 21:5. It says, "He who was seated on the throne said, 'I am making everything new.' Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." Okay? Jesus says, I am making everything new. Everything. The creation will be renewed and redeemed. So we can see that God's plan of salvation includes the created world and not just human beings. Okay? Now that we know something about some basic Bible truth about creation, let's turn our attention to what the Bible teaches about human beings, humanity, us. Okay? First, since humans are part of God's creation, so it is not surprising that we are similar to the rest of creation. That's no surprise to us. All 4 points that I made earlier about creation still apply to humans. First, we are distinct from God. Okay, so don't make any human being into gods or idols. Don't worship any other human beings, whether they are TV celebrities, movie stars, singers, or even pastors and church leaders, and anybody else you can think of. Don't idolize them. Okay, they are humans. They are distinct from God. Second, we are dependent on God. Okay, therefore, we need to recognize that we need God. We need Him for strength. We need Him to keep us alive every day, to supply us with food and everything that we need. Third, we are created good. Okay? So let's not be so cynical about human nature, because there is goodness in the original creation, and some of that still remains in every one of us, even those who are not Christians. We are created good. Finally, we are fallen and being recreated by God through Christ. Okay? Now that is particularly true for us as Christians. But for those who do not know Christ, they are also potential recipients of God's grace of salvation. They are able to be recreated by Christ if they come to Him in faith. Okay? Therefore, we have a task to share, responsibilities to share this good news with others. Okay? So since we are fallen and recreated by God, we need to face our human tendency to sin realistically. Okay? We cannot be so naive about both other people's sinful tendency or about ourselves. We have to recognize that we do sin. And we have to give room that people can fail. Okay? So there's a balance between the goodness and the sinfulness of people. Okay. We can still hope in our final transformation, though, because God is in the business of remaking us. Remaking us. So this is more on this point on the final article of our confession, Article 18. If I ever get to it, I will talk more about that with you. Secondly, not only are we similar to the rest of creation in those four ways, we are also different from the rest of creation. We are different. Okay? The key difference between us as human beings and the rest of creation is that we alone are made in the image of God. We alone are made in the image of God. The image of God is a very complex theological idea that theologians are still writing thick books about what it means. But I can think of at least three simple results of being made in God's image. Okay, what does being made in God's image mean? Okay, what does it mean to us? Okay, first, being made in God's image means that we have special value in God's sight. Okay, as His chosen representative to the rest of creation, to the rest of the universe. God has made us in His image to represent Him. So that therefore, we have special value in His eyes. Second, we have a built-in moral sense and the free will to choose to obey or disobey God. Okay? This means we have a unique responsibility among God's earthly creatures. Unique responsibility. Third, being made in the image of God means that we have a relational compatibility. Relational compatibility with our Creator. Okay? You know what compatible means, right? Just as your computer needs to be compatible with your printer for it to talk to the printer to print. We also are made in a way that so that we can share love and fellowship with God, our Creator. That is our unique privilege. So as people, as human beings created in God's image, we have unique value, we have unique responsibility, and we have a unique privilege. And next, the third big category that I want to talk about, we have to talk about creation. We have to talk about humanity. So how do the two relate? So this is my last area. Okay, what does the Bible teach about what about the relationship between humanities and creation? Okay, first, there are two extremes that we need to avoid when we think about the relationship between human and creation. Okay, first, we have to the first extreme that is out there is to see humans as the lords of the earth, or if you will, the masters of the universe. Okay, this perspective sees everything as stuff for human benefit, consumption, and exploitation. It has unlimited confidence in human wisdom to manage the world and to use its resources as we see fit. Some people call this the rape and pillage mentality towards the earth and accuse it of being responsible for the environmental crisis that we now face. Okay? And they are probably right. Unfortunately, this extreme view is often unfairly linked to the Christian view. But as I'll argue later, this view is far from being biblical. Okay. So we have to avoid this extreme of seeing humans as the lords of the universe. The other extreme view is to see humans as the parasites of the earth. The parasites of the earth. Okay? This view says that view is very common among the radical environmentalists. They say that nature is good and humans are bad. The most serious problem with this perspective that it sees human as no more valuable than anything else in nature. In fact, this view argues that since humans can threaten nature so much, it is actually less valuable. Okay, you may have seen the bumper sticker that says something like, save a whale, harpoon a human. Okay, or another one that says, the more people I meet, the more I love my dog or my cat. Now, these kind of feelings deny the dignity and the special value of human life. Now, as different as these extremes are, okay, to see humans as lords of the universe and to see humans as parasites, they actually share a common root problem. A common root problem. And that is they have both misplaced God. Okay? Remember, I presented a picture of creation in three parts. There's God, there's creation, and there's humanity as related, as a part of creation. Okay, so humanity and creation are on the same plane as a part of creation. God is above both. Okay, now if you put God away from the picture, you basically have only creation versus humanity. Okay, you have a problem. This is unstable. So what people have done is they either put humanity above creation, and therefore you have the Lord of the Universe problem. Okay, creation always dominating over. Humanity always dominates in creation. Okay? But some people reverse it and put creation above humanity. So the environment is supreme. Humanity is the problem. And you have the other problem, extreme. So the way to really put it back together is to put them on back in the same level. Okay, and put God above both. God valuing humanity, especially because of our image of our possessing the image of God. But that is a responsibility. Okay? That is not a license to exploit. Okay. Now, how can we put God in the picture and counter the tendency to follow this extreme? Okay, there are two corrective actions that I want to share with you. First, we need to value ourselves and our fellow humans. Okay, we need to value ourselves and our fellow humans. Not for selfish reasons, but because God has placed his image upon us. Okay? Human life is valuable to God, no matter how imperfect it is or how little it contributes to society. Hear me. Okay? Very often we value humans because of their productivity, how smart they are, how talented they are, how successful they are. None of that represents the image of God. The image of God resides in us, whether we sit in a wheelchair, whether we are deaf or mute, whether we have physical or mental disabilities. The image of God is still there. Okay, that's the problem with the agenda of eugenics, because eugenics wants to engineer humans in our expectations. Okay, eugenics wants to create better humans, even if it means getting rid of or replacing inferior humans. Whatever that means. Okay. How many of you have seen the movie Sixth Day, Arnold Schwarzenegger? Sixth Day. Came out a number of years ago. In this movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger plays an average guy named Adam. Now the reference to Genesis is obvious. The bad guys in the movie make a new Adam by cloning Arnold. And so this real Adam has to fight his way back to regain his life and his family. The movie raises at least two issues that are relevant for us here as we consider humans as the image of God. Is it moral to clone humans? And second, are clones truly humans? Okay? The movie seems to suggest at certain points that the answers to both questions are no. It's not moral to clone humans, and clone humans are not real human beings. Okay? But actually, the movie is more ambiguous than that. But let's, for the sake of argument, say that they're both no. But I want to agree that cloning humans is immoral. There's no question about that for me. Because inevitably, it devalues human life in the commodity that can be manipulated. Okay. But I also want to suggest that if and when humans are cloned, they are still human. Okay. With rights to be protected and dignity as created in God's image. Okay? I don't have time to argue my case this morning. I have only like 2 minutes left. Okay? So I just submit this thought to you for your consideration. It doesn't matter how a life came about, whether it is born in the womb, whether it is created on a dish or in a test tube or a clone. Okay? As long as it is human, it bears God's image and it is valuable in God's sight. Maybe the cloning is too far off from us. The more immediate question for us today, though, is how we treat those with physical or mental disabilities, or those born outside of a normal family. Do we call them bad names? Do we accept them? Do we embrace them? Do we value and honor them as God's image bearers? Finally, another way to counteract the two extremes is to reflect God's image towards creation. Okay, this will help us avoid the extreme of seeing humans as unaccountable masters. We do this by caring for creation according to God's loving intention towards it. Okay, we learn how to take care of the earth by looking at how God has taken care of the earth, by expressing our God-given creativity in nature. It is right to be environmentally sensitive, as well as to use creative way to enhance nature. There are so many occupations that have the potential to express both our care for creation and our creativity towards creation. For example, you can express your care for creation by engaging in fields like agriculture, geology, forestry, engineering, marine science, biology, medicine, pharmacy, and the list can go on and on. Okay? And to express your creativity, you can be an artist, okay? An architect, a landscaper, a gardener, a craftsperson, and even a cook. You can express God's creativity by taking the good gifts of God from the earth and turning them into wonderful, wonderful things that can glorify God. Let us take up that mandate with joy and eagerness. Whatever your field of studies or field of occupation is, you can engage in this stewardship of creation to show God's love, care, and His great creativity in this universe. May God bless us and use us in this way.
Thank you, Marcus, for that very insightful message on creation and humanity and our relationship with our God. I'd like to...